This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 76 was recorded on November 11th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. JDI Research founder Juliet DeClercq is back with us today. Juliet, your calls over the past few months have been almost impeccable, and I would further add they seem to be falling naturally into rhythm with your Macro Voices appearances. I know you've got a new report out just this morning, so please run us through your latest market thoughts.
It's always a pleasure to speak to you again, Eric. And indeed, you know, it's almost like I'm writing for you, but it's unconscious. So what I think is that markets price action since our last chat really confirms my view at the time that markets feared the global economy continuing to shrink much more than the risk of the financial repression party ending. Partly, and especially in Europe, it's obviously due to the fact that financial repression had become counterproductive. I'll repeat it here, but we've talked about that a lot. Below zero, lower rates promote saving rather than spending in a bid for everyone to keep future purchasing power constant. And this means basically that the ability of lower rates to stimulate the economy has reversed, and that leads to economic zombification. So given low rates has become pro-cyclical, it is only logical that higher rates have been taken in stride by global risky assets. This is the theme we first discussed on Macro Voices in early September, and since then it's become a hot topic. In fact, probably the hottest topic over the last 2 months. Policymakers are slowly realizing this, and even traditional doves like Bank of Italy, Visco, are becoming more reluctant to back further cuts. And we even have the uber-dovish Swedish Riksbank, which was an early pioneer of negative rates, come full circle and warn that, quote-unquote, if negative nominal interest rates are perceived as a more permanent state, the behavior of agents may change and negative effects may arise. Now, it even looks like they will return to zero with a 25 basis point hike in December, despite continued downside risk to the economy.
Juliet, the whole logic for why we needed rate hikes in the first place was that they needed to build up some ammunition to be able to deal with a financial crisis if it came again. Are you worried that global policy easing ammunition is now shrinking to a worrying level? I agree with you that lower rates are not the answer, but what is the answer?
Well, that's really the crucial question. Central banks are coming to accept that monetary and fiscal policy easing must work in conjunction. If you consider Europe, Brussels has started to loosen its grip on state budgets, and it even looks like the European fiscal impulse will reach 0.4 to 0.5% of GDP this year. That's the highest since 2010. Meanwhile, low yields make green projects and public infrastructure projects more appealing, and the new ECB head, which you know, has been much talked about over the past 3 months, has specifically called on Germany and the Netherlands, not that a predecessor, Draghi, would normally generalize by saying, quote-unquote, states with fiscal space. So she's becoming much more specific, and she wants them to use budget surpluses to fund investments. However, and that's a big but, Germany Finance Minister Scholz retorted last week that Germany has all the ability to act, but only if there is a crisis. So my answer to your question is that there is still policy easing answers to upcoming slowdowns, and it will undoubtedly be fiscal. But the main problem with fiscal policy is that it is also a finite resource. Firstly, much like monetary impulses drive activity growth, it is the fiscal impulse which also leads growth. This means that with low rates, one fiscal impulse will not necessarily put debt to GDP ratio off sustainability path. But what we can be sure about is that a series of fiscal stimuli certainly will. And to check that for yourself, you can just look at the ongoing US experience. The second issue with fiscal easing is that it tends to be opaque rather than transparent, which makes it less prone to automatically loosen financial conditions in a positive feedback loop from worsening macro conditions to markets. And obviously, the third key issue, and one that I discuss at length in today's report, is that fiscal policy is reactive rather than proactive, and it is a big deal for markets.
Julia, you've been talking about what Germans and some of the other European finance ministers are doing. Is this an issue that is primarily just with Europe?
No, it's not an issue just with Europe. In fact, even in the US, it is completely wrong to think that the Fed has done anything else this year than being reactive. In fact, when I consider the GDI research charts looking at the Fed's reaction function, 2019 has been the longest response time ever in history. And it's absolutely clear to me that the 2019 relent must be analyzed through the lens of a 2018 policy mistake and a forced 2019 U-turn. So we have FOMC members promote so-called quote-unquote insurance cuts to address global risk and the strong downside inflation skew. But the reality is that Chair Jerome Powell's Fed has been extremely hawkish to date, and the 2019 U-turn has not gone further than getting the level of monetary accommodation back in line with rising equity risk premia. A strong signal of a deteriorating, not a more resilient growth outlook. The bottom line is that when it comes to targeting inflation, the Fed talks the talk, but it hardly walks the walk. And this year's rate cuts follow the historical playbook. The Fed cut to respond to declining aggregate incomes and potential growth. Truth be told, the geopolitical tensions only aggravated this dynamic at the margin, but the 2019 Fed relent would have happened with or without the trade war with China. Now the tensions have obviously dissipated. Corporate sentiment could stabilize, but it's unlikely to cause an investment boom. The result? US real rates are back to neutral levels rather than restrictive ones, but this is really highly unlikely to spur inflation, whether in the US or globally. The real issue for me is that the Fed feels constrained by the lack of easing ammunition going forward and available to counter the next downturn. In other words, it's not that they don't want to be like targeting inflation, it's just that really they can't, and they're reluctant to say it. Now, there's another really important region for global reflation, and that's China. And in China, we've had exploding levels of debt and leverage, forcing authorities to become more surgical in stimulating the economy through sequential credit impulses. There, policymakers have switched to mitigating downside risk to growth and employment rather than resorting to a credit flood. And the sure result is that the global reflationary impact of the Chinese easing is less focused on imports and largely muted for the world this time around. So I've talked about the three main centers driving the global outlook: Europe, US, and China. And the bottom line is that the future of countercyclical policies belongs to the fiscal side. That's absolutely true. But for now, fiscal policies are largely focused on mitigating growth and employment downside rather than aiming at growth reacceleration and reflation. And given that an acceleration in final demand is a prerequisite for endogenous reflation, I can affirm with quite high conviction that global inflation is not on the cards. In fact, I'll go as far as saying that there will be no real growth reacceleration and therefore no inflation before we get destruction.
Juliet, I always love talking about these high-level macro big picture themes with you, but how do we translate this into actionable trading strategies?
So market-wise, the really interesting thing is that this market bounce and reflation tilt has been accompanied by raw material prices stabilizing rather than appreciating. And I know a lot of your listeners focus on commodities, and I would really urge them to go and see what happened in 2016 on this side and compare with what's happening today. This is basically fully in line with my view that policymakers are focused on mitigating growth downside rather than reflation. In macro lingo, this means that we will be much closer to a L-shaped recovery than a V-shaped one. If you look at the front end of the curve, 1 month OIS 1 year forward versus 1 month OIS 2 year forwards, you will see that we've gone back to flat for the first time this year. And that means that we've gone full circle since December 2018, with fixed income becoming more agnostic on the imminence of the next recession. All in all, we basically reverted to my more sanguine outlook in the past months. What we've done in fixed income since August is repricing the imminent end to the longest business cycle in history. But now that we have repriced, I'm not calling for a trend reversal, at least not in the US, because it's pretty clear to me that monetary policy is still on the card to be the answer to the next growth downside, which will eventually call for a lower equilibrium rate. Another thing to bear in mind, and I want to be absolutely clear that Macro Voices is not in any way a culprit, quite the opposite, in fact, as you, Eric, always make sure you bring a diversity of views amongst your guests rather than focusing on the ones with the biggest eye-catching headlines. But there is overall a downside to social media and trend-following strategies, and it is their proneness to quote-unquote groupthink pricing and sharp valuation overshoots. I think we have to see the recent fixed income sell-off as a typical case of a bubble bursting abruptly when price action stops fitting a dubious recession narrative bias. You can see it on Twitter, where macro pundits without the end of world inclination have a much smaller follower base. If you look at 10-year versus my favorite commodity gauge of gold versus copper, so one is obviously cyclical versus defensive, you will see that the 10-year yields have probably already overshot on the upside. So what I'm looking for is a combination of low inflation and a lower risk of an imminent growth downside. If you agree with me that global PMIs will have a shallow bounce in coming months, and I'm talking like early 2020, rather than end 2019, my analysis still shows value in global equities. And I'm talking about like European equities and emerging markets rather than US ones, which are closer to fair value. And since today, I'm also looking to add to this cyclical tilt, which I've had for the past 2 months, a disinflationary tilt in fixed income. And I'm actually adding to a positive equity outlook, a negative outlook on inflation after this repricing. And this is basically the only difference in my recommendations since we last spoke.
Well, Juliet, you have been extremely outspoken in your bullish views on equities the last couple of times that we've spoken to you, even at a time when it was extremely unpopular to hold that view. So we're looking forward, as always, to getting another update from you. Instead of doing the next appearance as an All-Stars appearance, though, we've got you booked for December 12th as a feature interview on the Macro Voices podcast. So listeners, you can look forward to a longer interview with Juliet. We're going to get a slide deck for that one, Juliet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Juliet, I'm sure our listeners will be looking forward to that. Meanwhile, shorter term, stand by your Macro Voices feed. We've got Charlie McElligott coming up as the feature interview on this week's Macro Voices flagship podcast Thursday night. And we've also got Luke Groman coming up for an All-Stars appearance this week. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.